infamy," the general interrupted her. "She stole silver. We saw the evidence, and no, it's not enough that she has poisoned herself. We cannot let her leave Kelsingrar. None of them can leave, for now they know the secret of the dragons well." Amber spoke. She sounded calm, but she pushed her words so that all could hear. "There was silver on my fingers before you were born, I believe, General Rapskull. Before your dragons hatched, before Kelsingrar was found and reclaimed, I bore what we of the six duchies call skill on my fingers, and your queen can attest to that." "She is not our queen, and he is not our king." General Rapskull's chest heaved with his emotion. Along his neck, patches of his scales showed a bright scarlet. "So they have said over and over. They have said that we must rule ourselves, that they are but figureheads for the rest of the world. So, keepers, let us rule ourselves. Let us put our dragons first, as we are meant to." He shook a finger at Lady Amber from a safe distance as he demanded of his fellows, "Recall how difficult it was for us to find and renew the Well of Silver. Will you believe her ridiculous tale that she has carried it on her fingertips for scores of years and not died of it?" Queen Malta's rueful voice cut through Rapskull's rant. "I am sorry to say that I cannot attest to such a thing, Lady Amber. I knew you only briefly during your time in Bingtown, and met you seldom during the negotiations of your loans to many of the traders." She shook her head. "A trader's word is all she has to give, and I will not bend mine, even to help a friend. The best I can say is that when I knew you in those days, you always went gloved. I never saw your hands."
"You heard her!"
Rapskull's shout was triumphant.
"There is no proof. There can be no—"
"If I may speak—"
For years, as King Shrewd's jester, the fool had had to make even his whispered comments heard across a large and sometimes crowded room. He had trained his voice to carry, and it now cut through not only Rapskull's shout, but the muttering of the crowd as well. A simmering silence filled the room. He did not move like a blind man as he stepped into the space his threat had cleared. He was a performer, stepping onto his stage. It was in the sudden grace of his movements and his storyteller's voice and the sweep of his gloved hand. He was the fool to me, and the layer of amber but a part of his performance.
"Recall a summer day, dear Queen Malta. You were but a girl, and all was in turmoil in your life. All your family's hopes for financial survival depended on the successful launch of the Paragon, a live ship so insane that thrice he had capsized and killed all his crew. But the mad ship was your only hope, and into his salvage and refitting, the Vestrid family had poured the last of their resources."
He had them, and me. I was as caught up in this tale as any of them.
"Your family hoped that the Paragon would be able to find and restore to you your father and your brother, both missing for so long, that somehow you could reclaim the Vivacia, your family's own lifeship, for it was rumored that she had been taken by pirates, and not any pirates, but the fabled Captain Kennet himself. You stood on the deck of the mad ship, putting on such a brave face in your made-over gown with last year's parasol. When all the others went below to tour the ship, you stayed on the deck and I stayed near you, to watch over you, as your Aunt Althea had requested."
"I remember that day," Malta said slowly.
It was the first time we had really spoken to each other. I remember we talked of the future, of what it might hold for me. You told me that a small life would never satisfy me. You told me that I must earn my future. How did you put it?
Lady Amber smiled, pleased at this queen remembered words spoken to her when she was a child.
What I told you is as true today as it was then. Tomorrow owes you the sum of your yesterdays. No more than that, and no less.
Malta's smile was like sunlight.
And you warned me that sometimes people wish that tomorrow did not pay them off so completely.
I did.
The queen stepped forward, unwittingly becoming part of the performance, as she took her place on Amber's stage. Her brow furrowed, and she spoke like a woman in a dream.
And then Paragon whispered to me, and I felt, oh, I did not know it then. I felt the dragon Tintaglia seize my thoughts. I felt she would smother me as she forced me to share her confinement in her tomb. I fainted. It was terrible. I felt I was trapped with the dragon and could never find my way back to my own body.
I caught you, Amber said, and I touched you on the back of your neck with my skilled fingers. Silvered, you would say, and by that magic I called you back to your own body. But it left a mark on you, and a tiny tendril of a link that we share to this very day.
What?
Malta was incredulous.
It's true!
The words burst from King Rain, along with a laugh born of both relief and joy.
On the back of your neck, my dear. I saw it there in the days when your hair was as black as a crow's wing, before Tintaglia turned it to gold. Three greyish ovals, like silver fingerprints, gone dusty with age.
Malta's mouth hung open in surprise. At his words, her hand had darted to the back of her neck, beneath the fall of glorious golden hair that was not blonde.
There was always a tender place there, like a bruise that never healed.
Abruptly, she lifted her cascading locks and held them on top of her head.
Come and look, any that wish. Come and see if what my husband and Lady Amber say is true.
I was one of those who did. I staggered forward, still leaning on Lant, to see the same marks I had once borne on my wrist. Three greyish ovals, the mark of the fool's silvered hand. They were there. The woman called Tamara stared in consternation when it was her turn to see the nape of the queen's neck.
It's a wonder it did not kill you,
she said in a hushed voice. I thought that would be an end of the matter, but when General Rapscal had taken three times as long to stare at the marks as any had, he turned away from the queen and said,
What does it matter if she had the silver then? What does it matter if she stole it a few nights ago, or several decades ago? Silver from the well belongs to the dragons. She must still be punished.
I stiffened my back and tightened my belly. My voice must not shake. A deeper breath to make my words carry. I hoped I would not vomit. It didn't come from a well. It came from King Verity's own hands, which he covered in skill to work his great and final magic. He got it from where a river of skill ran within a river of water. Name it not dragon silver. It is skill from the skill river.
And where might that be?
Rapscal demanded, in a voice so hungry, it alarmed me. I don't know, I replied honestly. I saw it but once in a skill dream. My king never allowed me to go there with him, lest I give way to the temptation to plunge myself into it.
Temptation?
Timara was shocked. I, who am privileged to use silver to do works for the city, feel no temptation to plunge myself into it. Indeed, I fear it. That is because you were not born with it coursing in your blood,
the fool said.
As some farseers are, as Prince Fitzchivalry was, born with the skill as a magic within him, one that he can use to shape children, as some might shape stone.
That struck them done.
Is it possible?
This from the winged elderling, a genuine question. Amber lifted her voice again.
The magic I bear on my hands is the same that was accidentally gifted to me by King Verity. It is rightfully mine, not stolen, any more than the magic that courses through the prince's veins. The magic you joyfully allowed him to share with your children. Not stolen any more than the magic within you that changes you and marks your children. What do you call it? Marked by the rain wilds? Changed by the dragons? If this silver on my fingers is stolen, why, then any here who have been healed have shared in the prince's thievery.
That does not excuse, Rapscal began.
Enough of this,
King Rain commanded. I saw Rapscal's eyes flash anger, but he did not speak as Rain added,
We have abused and exhausted our guests. What the prince freely shared, we have demanded in too great a quantity from him. See how pale he is and how he shakes. Please, my guests, return to your chambers. Let us bring you both refreshments and our sincere apologies. But in the greatest quantity of all, let us offer you our thanks.
He advanced, and with a gesture moved Perseverance aside. Behind him came Queen Malta, offering her arm fearlessly to Amber. Rain gripped my upper arm with surprising strength. I found myself a bit humiliated, but thankful for the help. I managed to look back once to see Malta and Spark escorting Amber, while Purr came last of all, slowly and with many a backward glance, as if wary that danger followed us. But the doors closed behind us without incident. We walked through a corridor lined with curious folk who had been excluded from that audience. Then behind us, I heard the doors open and a gust of conversation belled out to become a roar. The hall seemed interminable. The stairs, when we came to them, wavered in my vision. I could not imagine that I could climb them, but I knew I must. And I did, step by slow step, until we stood outside the doors of my guest chamber.
Thank you,
I managed to say.
You thank me?
Rain gave a snort of laughter.
I would better deserve a curse from you after what we have put you through.
Not you.
I will leave you in peace,
he said, excusing himself, and remained outside with his queen as my small party entered my room. When I heard Perseverance close the door behind me, relief swept through me, and my knees tried to fold. Lant put his arm around me to help me to the table. I took his hand to steady myself. A mistake. He cried out suddenly and went to his knees. In the same moment, I felt the skill course through me, as swift as a snake striking. Lant clutched at the scar from the sword wound the Chalcedian raiders had given him. It had been closed, apparently healed, but in that brief touch I had known there was more for his body to do, and known, too, of one rib healed crookedly, and a fracture in his jaw that was mildly infected, and giving him pain still. All repaired and set right, if one can call such a harsh correction a repair. I collapsed merrily on top of him. Lant groaned under me. I tried to roll off him, but could not summon the strength. I heard Perseverance gasp,
Oh, sir, let me help you.
Don't touch, I began, but he had already stooped and taken my hand. His outcry was sharper, a young man's voice taken back to a boy's shrill one. He fell onto his side and sobbed twice before he could master the pain. I managed to roll away from both of them,
Lant didn't move.
What has happened?
Amber's question was close to a scream.
Are we attacked? Fitz? Fitz, where are you?
I'm here. There's no danger to you. The skill. I touched Lant and Purr. Those were all the words I could manage.
What?
He did. The skill did something to my wound. It's bleeding again. My shoulder. Perseverance said in a tight voice. I knew it would. It had to, but only briefly. It was hard to find the strength to speak. I lay on my back, staring up at the high ceiling. It mimicked a sky. Artfully crafted fluffy clouds moved across a pale blue expanse. I lifted my head and summoned my voice. It's not blood, Purr. It's just wet. There was still a piece of fabric caught deep in the wound and slowly festering there. It had to come out and the fluids of infection with it. So it did, and your wound closed behind it. It's healed now. Then I lay back on the floor and watched the elegant room swing around me. If I closed my eyes, it went faster. If I opened them, the forested walls wavered. I heard Lant roll over on his belly and then stagger upright. He crouched over Purr and said gently, Let's look at it. Look at your injuries as well, I said dully. I shifted my eyes, saw Spark standing over me and cried out, No, don't touch me. I can't control it.
Let me help him,
Lady Amber said quietly. Two hesitant steps brought her to where I lay on the floor. I pulled my arms in tight, hiding my bare hands under my vest. No, you of all people must not touch me. She had crouched gracefully beside me, but as he hunkered back on his heels, he was my fool and not Amber at all. There was immense sorrow in his voice as he said,
Did you think I would take from you the healing that you did not wish to give me, Fitz?
The room was spinning, and I was too exhausted to hold anything back from him. If you touch me, I fear the skill will rip through me like a sword through flesh. If it can, it will give you back your sight, regardless of the cost to me, and I believe the cost of restoring your sight will be that I will lose mine. The change in his face was startling. Pale as he was, he went whiter until he might have been carved from ice. Emotion tautened the skin of his face, revealing the bones that framed his visage. Scars that had faded stood out like cracks in fine pottery. I tried to focus my gaze on him, but he seemed to move with the room. I felt so nauseous and so weak, and I hated the secret I had to share with him. But there was no hiding it any longer. Fool, we are too close. For every hurt I removed from your flesh, my body assumed the wound. Not as virulently as the injuries you carried, but when I healed my knife stabs in your belly, I felt them in mine the next day. When I closed the sores in your back, they opened in mine.
I saw those wounds,
Perseverance gasped.
I thought you'd been attacked, stabbed in the back.
I did not pause for his words. When I healed the bones around your eye sockets, mine swelled and blackened the next day. If you touch me, fool...
I won't!
He exclaimed. He shot to his feet and staggered blindly away from me.
Get out of here, all three of you! Leave now! Fitz and I must speak privately. No, Spark. I will be fine. I can tend myself. Please go. Now!
They retreated, but not swiftly. They went in a bunch with many backward glances. Spark had taken Purr's hand, and when they looked back it was with the faces of woeful children. Lant went last, and his expression was set in a farseer stare so like his father's that no one could have mistaken his bloodlines. My chamber, he said to them as he shut the door behind them, and I knew he would try to keep them safe. I hoped there was no real danger, but I also feared that General Rapscal was not finished with us.
Explain,
the fool said flatly. I gathered myself up from the floor. It was far harder than it should have been. I rolled to my belly, drew my knees up under me until I was on all fours, and then staggered upright. I caught myself on the table's edge and moved around it until I could reach a chair. My inadvertent healing of first Lantan and then Purr had extracted the last of my strength. Seated, I dragged in a breath. It was so difficult to keep my head upright. I can't explain what I don't understand. It's never happened with any other skill healing I've witnessed. Only between you and me. Whatever injury I take from you appears on me. He stood, his arms crossed on his chest. He wore his own face, and Amber's painted lips and rouged cheeks looked peculiar now. His eyes seemed to bore into me. No, explain why you hid this from me. Why you couldn't trust me with the simple truth. What did you imagine? That I would demand you blind yourself that I might see?
I know.
I braced my elbows on the table and rested my head in my hands. I could not recall when I had felt more drained. A steady pulse of pounding pain in my temples kept pace with my heartbeat. I felt a desperate need to recover my strength, but even sitting still was demanding more than I had to give. I wanted to topple over onto the floor and surrender to sleep. I tried to order my thoughts. You were so desperate to regain your sight. I didn't want to take that hope from you. My plan was that once you were strong enough, the coterie would try to heal you, if you would let them. My fear was that if I told you I couldn't heal you without losing my sight, you'd lose all hope. The last piece of the truth was angular and sharp-edged in my mouth. And I feared you would think me selfish that I did not heal you. I let my head lower onto my folded arms. The fool said something. I didn't hear that.
You weren't meant to,
he replied in a low voice. Then he admitted,
I called you a clodpole.
Oh, I could barely keep my eyes open. He asked a cautious question.
After you'd taken on my hurts, did they heal?
Yes, mostly, but very slowly. My back still bore the pinkish dimples in echo of the ulcers that had been on his back. Or so it seemed to me. You know how my body has been since that runaway healing the coterie did on me years ago. I scarcely age, and injuries heal overnight, leaving me exhausted. But they healed, fool. Once I knew what was happening, I was more careful. When I worked on the bones around your eyes, I kept strict control. I halted. It was a terrifying offer to make, but in our sort of friendship it had to be made. I could try to heal your eyes, give you sight, lose mine, and see if my body could restore mine. It would take time, and I am not sure this is the best place for us to make such an attempt. Perhaps in Bingtown, after we've sent the others home, we could take rooms somewhere and make the attempt.
No, don't be stupid.
His tone forbade any response. In his long silence, sleep crept up on me, seeping into every part of my body. It was that engulfing demand the body makes, one that knows no refusal.
Fitz, Fitz, look at me. What do you see?
I prized my eyelids open and looked at him. I thought I knew what he needed to hear.
I see my friend. My oldest, dearest friend, no matter what guise you wear. And you see me clearly?
Something in his voice made me lift my head. I blinked blearily and stared at him. After a time, he swam into focus.
Yes.
He let out his pent breath.
Good. Because when I touched you, I felt something happen, something more than I expected. I reached for you to call you back, for I feared you were vanishing into the Skill Current. But when I touched you, it wasn't as if I touched someone else. It was like folding my hands together, as if your blood suddenly ran through my veins. Fitz, I can see the shape of you, there in your chair. I fear I may have taken something from you.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I close my eyes, too weary for surprise, too exhausted for fear. I thought of that other day, long ago, when I had drawn him back from death and pushed him into his own body again. In that moment, as I had left the body I had repaired for him, as we had passed each other before resuming our own flesh again, I'd felt the same. A sense of oneness, of completion. I recalled it, but was too weary to put it into words. I put my head down on the table and slept. I floated. I had been part of something immense, but now I was torn loose. Broken away from the great purpose that had used me as a conduit. Useless. Again. Voices blowing in the distance.
I used to have nightmares about him. Once, I wet my bed.
A boy gave a half laugh.
Him? Why? Because of the first time I met him. I was just a child, really. A child given what seemed like a harmless task. To leave a gift for a baby.
He cleared his throat.
He caught me in B's room, cornered me, like a rat. He must have known I was coming, though I can't guess how. He was suddenly there with a knife at my throat.
Breathless silence.
Then what?
He forced me to strip down to my skin. I know now that he was intent on completely disarming me. He took everything I'd carried. Little knives, poison, wax to copy keys. All the things I'd been so proud to have, all the little tools for what my father wanted me to become. He took them. I stood naked and shivering while he stared at me, deciding what to do with me.
You thought he'd kill you? Tom Bacharach?
I knew who he was. Rosemary had told me, and she told me that he was far more dangerous than I could imagine, in more ways. Witted. And that there had always been rumors that he had appetites.
I don't understand.
A pause.
That he might desire boys as much as he liked women.
A dead silence. Then a lad laughed.
Him? Not him. There was only one for him. Lady Molly. It was always a joke among the servants at Withywood's.
He laughed again and then gasped.
Knock twice. The kitchen maids would giggle. And then wait and knock again. Never go in until one of them invites you. You never know where they will be going at each other. The men of the estate were proud of him. That old stud hasn't lost his fire, they'd say. In his study, in the gardens, out in the orchards.
The orchard. A summer day. Her son's gone off to seek their fortunes. We'd walked among the trees, looking at the swelling apples, speaking of the harvest to come. Molly, her hands sweet with the wild blossoms she'd gathered. I'd paused to tuck a sprig of baby's breath into her hair. She had turned her face up to me, smiling. The long kiss had turned into something more.
When Lady Shun first came to Withywood's, one of the new housemaids said he'd gone off to find himself a willing woman. Cook Nutmeg told me of it. She told that housemaid. Not him. It was only Lady Molly, and never anyone else for him. He can't even see another woman. Then she told Revel what the housemaid had said. Revel called her into his study. He's not Lord Grab-and-Pinch. He's Holder Bacharach. We won't have gossip here. And then he told her to pack her things. So Cook Nutmeg told us.
Molly had smelled like summer. Her flowers had scattered on the ground as I pulled her down to me. The deep orchard grass was a flimsy wall around us. Clothing pushed aside, a stubborn buckle on my belt, and then she was astride me, clutching my shoulders, leaning hard on her hands as she pinned me down.
leaning down, her breasts free of her blouse, putting her mouth on mine. The sun warmed her bare skin to my touch. Molly. Molly. "And now, do you still fear him?" the boy asked. The man was slow to reply. "He is to be feared. Make no mistake in that, Purr. Fitz is a dangerous man. But I'm not here because I have a rightful caution of him. I'm here to do my father's bidding. He tasked me to watch over him, to keep him safe from himself, to bring him home when all is done, if I can." "That won't be easy," the boy said reluctantly. "I heard Foxglove talking to Riddle after that battle in the forest. She said he has a mind to hurt himself, to end himself, since his wife is dead and his child gone." "It won't be easy," the man conceded with a sigh. "It won't be easy." I dreamed. It was not a pleasant dream. I was not a fly, but I was caught in a web. It was a web of a peculiar sort, not of sticky threads, but of defined channels that I had to follow as if they were deep footpaths cut through an impenetrable forest of fog-enshrouded trees. And so I moved, not willingly, but unable to do otherwise. I could not see where my trail led, but there was no other. Once I looked behind me, but the track I had followed had vanished. I could only go on. She spoke to me.
"You interfered with what is mine. I am surprised, human. Are you too stupid to fear provoking dragons?"
"Dragons don't bother with introductions." The fog blew slowly away, and I was in a place where rounded grey stones, scabbed with lichen, humped out of a grassy sward. The wind was blowing as if it had never begun and would never stop. I was alone. I tried to be small and kept silent. Her thoughts still found me.
"The child was mine to shape. You had no right."
Huddling small had not worked. I tried to keep my thoughts calm, but I fervently wished that Nettle were here with me in this dreamscape. She had withstood the full onslaught of the dragon Tintaglia when she was still new to the skill. I reached for my daughter, but the dragon boxed me as if I were a frog captured in a boy's calloused hands. I was in her control and alone. I hid my fear of her deep inside my chest. I did not know which dragon this was, and I knew better than to ask. A dragon guards its name lest others acquire power over it.
"It's only a dream,"
scarcely applies to what a dragon can do to one's sleeping mind. I needed to wake up, but she pinned me as a hawk's talons would pin a struggling hare. I felt the cold and stony land beneath me, felt the icy wind ripping warmth from my body, and still I saw nothing of her. Perhaps logic might reach her. My intent was never to interfere, but only to make the small changes that would let the children live.
"The child was mine."
"Do you prefer a dead child to a live one?"
"Mine is mine, not yours."
The logic of a three-year-old. The pressure on my chest increased, and a translucent shape coalesced above me. She shimmered blue and silver. I recognized which child she claimed by the markings she shared with the child's mother. The mother had been the woman who claimed to work with silver. Timara, the winged and clawed elderling. This dragon claimed the girl child who had been fearless in choosing the changes she would have. A child that was only marginally human. She had not hesitated to choose dragon feet over human ones so that she might leap higher and grip limbs better when she climbed. A brave and intelligent child.
"That she is."
I sensed a grudging pride. I had not meant to share the thought, but perhaps flattering the child or the dragon might win me a reprieve. The pressure of the dragon's foot on my chest had gone past painful, to the sensation of ribs flexed as far as they could bend. If she cracked my ribs into stabbing pieces that punctured my lungs, would I die or wake up? Being aware that I was dreaming did not lessen the pain or the sense of imminent disaster.
Die in your dreams, wake up insane, or so the old elderling saying went. Your connections to this world are strong, little human. There is something about you, yet you are not dragon-touched by any dragon I know. How is that possible?
I don't know.
What is this thread I perceive in you, dragon and not dragon? Why have you come to Kelsingrar? What brought you to the dragon's city?
Revenge, I gasped. I could feel my ribs beginning to give way. The pain was astonishing. Surely if I were asleep, this pain would wake me. So this was real. Somehow this was real, and if it were real, I would have a knife at my belt, and if it were real, I wouldn't die like a pinned hare. My right arm was caught under the dragon's talon, but my left was free. I reached, groped, and found it, drew it and stabbed with all my remaining strength, only to have it clash against the heavy scaling of the dragon's foot. My blade skated and turned aside, as if I had tried to stab a stone. She did not even flinch.
You seek revenge on dragons? For what?
My arm fell lifelessly away. I did not even feel my fingers lose their grip on the knife. Pain and lack of air were emptying me of will. I did not utter the words, for I had no air left. I thought the matter.
Not revenge on dragons. On the servants. I'm going to Clary's to kill all the servants. They hurt my friend and destroyed my child.
Clary's?
Dread. A dragon could feel dread. Amazing. Even more surprising, it seemed to be dread of the unknown. A city of bones and white stones far south of here, on an island. A city of pale folk who believe they know all the futures and which one is best to choose.
The servants!
She began to fade from my dream.
I remember something very bad.
Suddenly I was unimportant to her. As her attention left me, I could breathe again and I floated in a dark grey world, either dead or alone in my sleep.
No, I didn't want to sleep and be vulnerable to her. I struggled toward wakefulness, trying to recall where my body truly was. I opened my eyes to deep night and blinked sticky eyes. A mild wind was blowing across the hills. I could see the trees swaying in it. In the distance, I saw snow-topped mountains. The moon was big and round, and the ivory of old bones. Game would be moving. Why had I been sleeping so soundly? My head felt as if it was stuffed full of wool. I lifted my face and snuffed the air. I felt no breeze and smelled no forest, only myself. Sweat. The smell of an occupied room. The bed was too soft. I tried to sit up. Nearby, clothing rustled and someone set strong hands on my shoulders.
Go slow. Let's start with water.
The night sky was a cheat, and I'd never hunt like that again.
Don't touch me skin to skin, I reminded Lant.
His hands went away, and I struggled into a sitting position. I swung my legs over the edge of the bed. The room spun three times and settled. All was dim and twilight around me.
Take this, he said, and a cool container was pushed gently into my hands.
I smelled it. Water. I drank until it was gone. He took it away and came back with more. I drained it again.
That's enough for now, I think.
What happened?
He sat down beside me on the edge of the bed. I looked at him carefully and was grateful I could see him.
What do you recall?
He asked me after a long silence.
I was healing elderling children.
You touched children? One after another. Not that many, six, I think. They all grew better and, With every healed child, the wonder of the Kelsingar Elderlings grew, and you became stranger. I have no skill, Fitz, yet even I felt as if you were the eye of a storm of magic that flowed toward you and then blew all around us. And when there were no more children, other people began to push forward. Not just the Elderlings, but Rainwild folk. I'd never seen people so malformed. Some had scales, and some had dangling growths along their jaws. Some had claws or dragon nostrils, but not in a lovely way, not like the Elderlings do. They were like diseased trees, and full of sudden hope. They began to push toward you, asking you to mend them. Your eyes were blank and you didn't answer. You just began to touch them, and they collapsed. Their bodies changed, but almost immediately you went pale and began to shake. Yet still you wouldn't stop, and still they came on, pushing and begging. Lady Amber cried out to you and shook you, and still you stared, and still distorted people pushed toward you. Then Amber pulled off her glove and clutched your wrist and dragged you back from them. My recollection was like a tapestry unfurling. Lant was blessedly silent as I pieced my life back together. And since then, is all well? I recalled the pushing and the shouting crowd. Were any of you hurt? Where are the others? No one was hurt seriously, scratches and bruises. He gave a disbelieving snort. And only Spark still bears those marks. When you touched me and Purr, all our hurts were healed. I have not felt this healthy since before I was beaten that night in Buckkeep Town.
I'm sorry. He stared at me.
You're sorry for healing me?
For doing it so abruptly, without warning. The skill, I could not control it. He stared past me.
It felt peculiar. As if I'd been dunked in an ice-cold river and then fished out right away, as dry and warm as I'd been.
His voice trailed away as he recalled it. Where are they now, Amber and Spark and Purr? Was there danger? Had I slept while they were threatened?
Probably sleeping still. I took this watch.
Watch? How long have I been here? He gave a small sigh.
This is the second night. Well, perhaps I should say the morning of the third day. It's nearly dawn.
I think I fell asleep at the table.
You did. We moved you to the bed. I feared for you, but Amber said to let you sleep and not to call in a healer. I think she worried what might happen if a healer touched your skin. She bade us all be very careful not to touch you.
I answered his unspoken question. I think I have control of my skill again. I was still for a moment, investigating the flow of the magic. It was strong here in the old city, but I once more felt it as something outside myself rather than a current flowing through me. I considered my walls and found them stronger than I had expected.
I gave you powdered elf bark,
and reminded me. That I recall. I turned to stare at him. I'm surprised you carry such a thing. He looked away from me.
You recall my father's early hopes for me, the training I had. I brought many small things on this journey.
For a time, we were both silent. Then I asked him, what of General Rapskull? What is the current feeling toward us here in Kelsingrar?
Lant licked his lips. Great respect founded on fear, I think. Amber has counseled us to caution. We have been eating in our rooms and mingling little. None of us has seen General Rapskull, but there has been one note from him and three visits from one of his soldiers, an elderling named Case. He was respectful but insistent that General Rapskull needed a private meeting with you. We've turned him away because you were still resting, but none of us feels it would be safe for you to meet with him alone. The general seems peculiar.
I nodded silently, but quietly resolved that a private meeting might eventually be needed if I were to dispel whatever threat the general presented to Amber.
After such a meeting, he just might fall deathly ill if he continued to pursue his vendetta. "The elderlings have respected our wish for solitude," Lant continued. "I suspect the king and queen have sheltered us from curiosity and requests. Mostly we've encountered the serving folk, and they seem to feel kindly toward us." He added awkwardly, "Some are touched by the rain wilds in unpleasant ways. I fear that some may seek healing from you, despite the king's order that you be left in peace. We did not want to leave you alone because we did not want the elderlings to find you unguarded. At first, then we feared you might be dying."
As if startled by his own words, he suddenly sat up straight and said,
"I should let the others know you were awake. Do you want food?"
"No."
"Yes. I didn't want it, but I knew I needed it. I had not been dying, but I had not been living either. My body felt like soiled clothing, stiff with dirt and smelly with sweat. I rubbed my face, definitely a beard now. My eyes were gummy, my tongue and teeth coated. I'll see to it then." He left. The room was lightening around me, mimicking dawn. The nightscape on the wall was fading. I dragged off the elderling robe I wore as I went to the pool. As soon as I knelt by the water spout, it began to release steaming water. I was soaking in hot water when Amber entered. Perseverance was with her, but she walked beside him, not relying on him to guide her as they came directly to the pool's edge. I answered the basic questions before they could be asked. "I'm awake. Nothing hurts. I'm starting to get hungry. I have my skill under control, I think. Please avoid touching me until I'm sure."
"How are you truly?"
Amber asked me. I liked that her eyes settled on me even as I wondered if my vision was diminished at all. If the fool had gained a small amount of vision, had I lost some of mine? I had not noticed a difference. Yet. "I'm awake, still tired, but not sleepy."
"You slept a long time. We feared for you."
Amber sounded hurt, as if my being unconscious had bruised her feelings. The hot water had loosened my muscles. My body was starting to feel more familiar, as if I might belong in it. I ducked my head one more time and scrubbed my eyes clear. I waded out of the water, still some aches. 60 was not 30, regardless of how I might appear. Perseverance left Amber's side to bring me a drying cloth and then a robe. I spoke as I wiped water from my legs. "What is the mood of the city? Did I harm anyone?" Amber spoke.
"Apparently not, at least not in a permanent way. The children you touched all seem to be faring better now than before you touched them. The Rainwilders you touched have sent you notes of thanks, and of course, please that you help others. At least 3 have left notes under the door begging you to help them with their changes. Exposure to dragons or even areas where dragons were long present seems to trigger their afflictions, and those deliberately changed by dragons fare much better than those who simply are born with changes or acquire them as they grow. Those changes are often deadly to children, and life-shortening for all."
5 notes now," Perseverance said quietly. 2 more were outside the door when we came." I shook my head. I dare not try to help anyone. Even with the elf bark Lant gave me, I can feel the skill current sweeping past me like a riptide. I won't venture into that again. I poked my head out of the neck hole of the green elderling robe. The skin on my arms was still damp, but I wrestled my hands through the sleeves, shrugged my shoulders, and felt the garment settle itself around me. Elderling magic? Was there silver in the fabric of this robe, reminding it that it was a garment? The elderlings had mixed skill into their roads so that they always recalled they were roads. Moss and grass never consumed them. Was there a difference between the skill and the magic the elderlings had used to create this marvelous city? How did the magics intersect? There was too much I didn't know, and I was glad that Lant had dosed me and rescued me from any further experiments. "I want to leave here as soon as we can." I hadn't thought about saying the words, they just came out of my mouth.
I walked as I spoke, and Purr and Amber followed me through the bedroom and into the entry chamber. Lance was there. "I agree," he said instantly. "Unskilled as I am, still the whispering of the city reaches me stronger with every passing day. I need to be away from here. We should be gone before the goodwill of the Elderlings fades. General Rapscal may be able to sway people against us, or folk may begin to resent that you refuse to heal them."
"Indeed, I think that very wise, that we cannot be too hasty. Even if there was a ship heading downriver, we would still have to be sure we bid farewell to Kelsingra in a way that ruffles no feathers."
Amber's voice was pensive.
"We have a long journey through their territories, and the dragon traders have deep ties with the Rain Wild traders. They, in turn, have deep family ties with Bingtown and the Bingtown traders. We must travel by river from here to Treehog in the Rain Wilds. From there, our safest transport would be on one of the live ships that move on the river. We must journey at least as far as Bingtown, and there find a vessel that will take us through the Pirate Isles and to Jamalia. So the goodwill of the Dragon Keepers may bear us far, at least as far as Bingtown, and perhaps beyond."
He paused, then added,
"For we must journey beyond Jamalia, and beyond the Spice Isles."
"And then off the edge of any proven chart I've ever seen."
"Strange waters to you will be home ports to others. We will find our way there. I found my way to Buck many years ago. I can find my way back to my homeland again."
His words were little comfort to me. I was already tired just from standing. What had I done to myself? I sat down in one of the chairs, and it welcomed me. I had expected to travel alone and light, working my passage for some of it. I've made no plans for this type of journey, no provisions for taking anyone with me. Soft chimes sounded and the door opened. A manservant wheeled a small table into the room. Covered dishes, a stack of plates. Clearly a meal for all of us. Spark slipped in through the open door. She was dressed and groomed, but her eyes told me she had only recently left sleep behind. Lant thanked the serving man. Our silence held until the door had closed behind him. Spark began to uncover the dishes on the tray, while Perseverance put out the plates.
"There's a scroll tube here, a heavy one with a funny crest on it. A chicken wearing a crown."
"The crowned rooster is the Cuprous family crest,"
Amber told us. A shiver went up my back. "That's different from a rooster crown?"
"It is, though I have wondered if they have some ancient relationship."
"What's a rooster crown?"
Spark asked.
"Open the letter and read it, please,"
Amber said, fending off her question. Perseverance passed it to Spark, who handed it to Lant.
"It's addressed to the 6 Duchy's emissaries, so I suppose that means all of us."
Lant broke the wax seal and tugged out a page of excellent paper. His eyes skimmed down it.
"Rumors of your waking have dashed from the kitchen to the throne room. We are invited to dine tonight with the Kelsingrad Dragon Keepers, if Prince Fitzchivalry's health permits."
He lifted his eyes to mine.
"The Keepers, I have learned, are the original Rainwilders who set out with the dragons to find Kelsingra, or at least a habitable area for dragons. There were not many of them, less than 20, I believe. Others have come to live here, of course. Rainwilders seeking a better life, former slaves and other folk. Some of the Keepers have taken wives from among the newcomers. Their ambassadors to King Dutiful presented themselves as coming from a populous and prosperous city. But what I've seen here and heard from the serving folk tells me a different story."
He mused.
"They've had only moderate luck at building their population to a level that can sustain the city, even on a village level. The Rainwild folk find that they change faster when they live here, and seldom in good ways. As you have seen, the children born in Kelsingra are not many, and the changes that mark them are not always good ones."
"An excellent report,"
Spark said in a fair imitation of Shade's voice. Perseverance snorted into his hands.
"Truly,
Amber agreed, and the color rose in Lent's cheeks.
He trained you well, I said. Why do you think they convene and invite us to dine with them?
To thank you?
Perseverance seemed incredulous. I would not have thought of that.
It will be the preliminary to bargaining with us. It's the trade away.
Amber sighed.
We know what we need from them. Fresh supplies and passage as far south as we can get. The question is, what will they ask of us in return?
Chapter 3. In the Mountains. This was a very short dream. A chalk-faced man, dressed in robes of green, trimmed with gold, walked on a beach. A grotesque creature hunched on a grassy outcrop above the beach and watched him, but the man paid it no mind. He was carrying fine chains, as if to be worn as jewelry, but much stronger. He carried them in loops on his arm. He came to a place where the sand was shaking and bulging. He watched it, smiling. Snakes began to come out of the earth. They were large snakes, as long as my arm. They were wet, and their skins were bright shades of blue and red and green and yellow. The man put a looped chain around the head of a blue one, and the chain became a noose. He lifted the snake clear of the ground. It thrashed, but it could not get away, even though it opened wide its mouth and showed white teeth, very pointed. The pale man caught another snake in his snare, a yellow one. Next, he tried to catch a red one, but it shook free of him and slithered away very fast toward the sea.
"I will have you!"
the man shouted, and he chased the snake and stepped on the end of its tail, trapping it near the wave's edge. He held the leashes of his two captive snakes in one hand, and in the other he shook out a fresh snare for the red snake. He thought she would turn and dart her head at him, and he would loop the chain around her neck. But it was a dragon who turned on him, for he was treading on a dragon's tail.
"No,"
she said to him very loudly.
"But I will have you."
The picture I have painted for this dream is not very good, for my father's red ink does not gleam and glisten as the snake did.
Dream Journal of B. Farcia.
I slept cold and woke to the toe of Dwalia's shoe nudging my sore belly.
"What have you been doing?"
she demanded of me, and then snarled over her shoulder.
"Aleria, you were supposed to be watching her. Look at this. She's been chewing at her bonds."
Aleria came at a stumbling trot, her fur coat slung around her shoulders, her pale hair a tangle around her bleary-eyed face.
"I was up almost all night. I asked Repin to watch her."
Dwalia spun away from me. I tried to sit up. My bound hands were cold and nearly numb. My whole body was stiff with various bruises and cuts. I fell over and tried to roll away from her, but I didn't get far. I heard a slap and then a wordless yelp.
"No excuses,"
Dwalia snarled. I heard her stalk away. I tried to stagger to my feet, but Aleria was swifter. She put a knee in my back to keep me down. I twisted toward her to bite. She put one hand on the back of my head and pushed my face down on the paving stone.
"Give me a reason to slam your teeth into that,"
she invited me. I didn't.
"Don't hurt my brother,"
Vindalaya wailed.
"Don't hurt my brother,"
Dwalia mocked him in a shrill whine.
"Be silent."
The last word she spoke with a grunt, and I heard Vindalaya yelp. Aleria pulled at my tunic hem, then sawed strips from it with her belt knife. She cursed in a guttural voice as she worked. I could feel her fury. Now was not a good time to challenge her. She rolled me over roughly, and I saw the print of Dwalia's hand on her face, livid red against her pale skin.
"Bitch,"
she snapped, and I did not know if she meant me or Dwalia. She seized my stiff hands and jerked them roughly toward her. She brutally sawed at the sodden rags with her dull knife.
I pulled my wrists as far apart as I could, hoping she would not cut me. This time, I tie them behind your back, she promised through gritted teeth. I heard footsteps crunching through leaves and twigs, and Repin came to join Elaria. I'm sorry.